Jerry, good to be back with you, this time in the comfort of your home. Thanks for taking the time to talk to our listeners. How have you been and what's sort of been the focus since the last time we dropped in and heard a bit about what's going on?
Firstly, more thanks go to you for talking about dropping in. You've come all the way from Melbourne to Perth, obviously for family, but you've included me in and it gets me out to Melbourne listeners. And I'd love to update them on all things that matter, that should matter, particularly about vulnerable people, people marginalised, people who make up the prison population, juvenile, children's prisons and adult prisons. They're the forgotten, and there's a high recidivism rate because we don't support them. We work carcerally, brutally, confinement, and don't work to understand their lives and the unfairnesses that they actually have from the beginning of life and that they've suffered with no fault of their own and not had the nurture that they should have had. Some of it's been absent from the beginning and some of it's been stressing because their parents have felt the same predicaments that they felt, marginalised and left behind by the sins of the nation. So it's up to us to make the difference in people's lives or get others to understand, even premiers and ministers and political entities or whatever, to understand that we should be leaving no one behind, holding no one back. And we definitely do that. We definitely do that. We do leave people behind, despite what politicians say, and we do that intentionally, and we hold some back, like prisoners. There's no prisoner rights, there's no Medicare for prisoners, so they come out worse than what they went in. It's only less than a couple of months ago we launched a book. So I wrote a book, not because I believe in books. I'm a firm believer that no book has ever changed the world to its betterment, to its collective betterment, or to its potential best that we could be. And I've always been, even though I've been a researcher, and I've done a lot of research work and research projects, and even ghostwritten quite a few major texts. I took this book on because the mother asked me to, the mother of Cleveland Dodd. The book's actually called Cleveland Dodd, Child of the Desert Sunrise. And he was 16. He died in Unit 18 of Banksia Hill Prison. Unit 18 is segregated in an adult prison, Casuarina Prison, a maximum security prison. 1,000 adults in there. And any number of kids have been in there from half a dozen to about 20 at a time. And it's still open. We objected. Unit 18, it was formed in 2023 in July. It was rushed into existence because they couldn't, well, they were doing all things wrong by the way they were coming across to the children inside Banksia Hill, and all sorts of volatility exploded. Longings and pains and sufferings translated as protests and rebelliousness and conduct which most people find unbecoming, but has been their suffering and their surround since the beginning of life. No one listens to them and they play out and act out. And all they're doing is really calling out for help to get the support that they should be getting, which they don't get. We've endured 2 years of a coronial inquest. The findings came in on December the 8th, and I was there at the coroner's court with the mother, Nadine Dodd, when we got the findings. They were pretty strong findings for the most part. Not everything on the wish list for bleeding heart leftists like myself and for people who want to make a difference in people's lives, turning them around, which has been my life's bent. But I believe in doing everything that we can by everybody, starting at the bottom end up and not turning our downtrodden into prisons, which are the rubbish tips of this nation. 132 prisons in this nation, 17 juvenile prisons, children's prison, and 115 adult prisons. And they're as if they're the rubbish tips of this nation. That's how they're treated. So, you know, people are nominally locked up for 12 hours overnight, and 12 hours is half the day, and then it can be rolling lockdowns of 24 hours straight at a whim's notice, and or on average, 16 to 17 hours is not uncommon. And sometimes in adult prisons, there's gross overcrowding, so there's 3 or 4 to a prison cell. And in children's prisons, it's usually 1 to a cell, but sometimes 2, but 1 to a cell. But, you know, human spirit is an immortal call. Wasn't born into being confined in small spaces that you can, in some of these prison cells, you can touch both walls by outstretching your arms. And it's a stir-crazy existence in that we've got, this is an abomination, we've got 18th century prisons here in the Western world, if we can say that, maybe most of the world, with the exception of more progressive countries like the Scandinavian countries, Norway, Finland, Sweden, which actually have a whole different experience. It's custodial, but it's not bars, it's unlocked doors, and it's human respect and dignity, and they have the lowest recidivism rates. So if we want to compel change, we've got to understand what they do, because what they do works. 90% of children in Norway, for instance, 90% of children in Norway who offend once do not offend again. That's what we've got to take away as a lesson. 90% of children that offend once in Western Australia and pretty much across the country offend again. Not just twice, but 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 times. And some children have gone in 20, 30, 40 times in their ages 10 to 18 and have spent all their teens from 13 to 18, all their birthdays in children's prisons. So that's what we're faced with in this country. We've got the financial firepower in this country, no matter what's being said about tight budgets and gross domestic product and productivity. This nation is an affluent nation, one of the richest on the planet, the 12th richest in fact, and it has a treasure trove of $16 trillion, which it doesn't talk about. It only talks about the GDP and the GSP, gross state product or gross domestic product from, on the national level. And it concocts all this story about the budget that we have. What we have in this nation is the GDP, which is the pay packet of any similar analogy to a household, convoluted with the capacity of this nation's financial fiscal power when we don't include the treasure trove of $15 trillion in that equation of the liquid and capital assets this country actually has. So we have to take notice of the facts and work with the facts, not with the propaganda that actually leaves people behind, because there's an assumption, it's a demonizing assumption, we can't afford to. We can afford to. And we can afford what the Norwegians actually have. Life transformative, immersive culture that works with young people to turn their lives around. And they've got the lowest recidivism rates, not just in Europe, but the world.
And so you've outlined all this in your book.
I have. It's a dedication I'd like to read from the book because it tells the whole story. Because as I said, I'm not one who believes in books, but I wrote it as a memoir to young one, Cleveland, whose name we've got permission to mention from the mother and all the family and the father too. And I wrote in the dedication, thank you to Nadine, Cleveland's mum, who both insisted and inspired me to write this book. Most days of the last 2 years, we spoke of the injustices Cleveland endured, which his family had been devastated by. Nadine's harrowing journey guided me to write this book. Nadine prosecuted the importance of writing, telling her son's tragedy. Nadine does not believe that her son's tragedy was not foreseeable. Nadine asked me to include what I've been through the last 2 decades in calling out Australia's children's prisons. We were all harangued by the loss of Cleveland. Of every child who should have a better life, if Banksia Hill, for instance, was and is a bastion of the life transformative, instead of a turnstile to adult incarceration. I believe no book makes a significant difference. Well, of course, I hope I am wrong. The Dean hopes that this testament to Cleveland brings on the investiture of changes that, if they had been realised decades ago, would have ensured the thriving of Cleveland. It's a forensic detail of everything that led up to Cleveland's death, a forensic detail of the boy's life before incarceration in child's prison, before being failed the first time at Banksia Hill. Actually, the first time he was failed was with the courts. They should have actually got him into life transformative diversionary programs. Most of them don't exist, but that's what they should be compelling governments to actually put in place. Justices have that capacity. And the president of the Children's Court, as a result of this, actually has stood up and actually has been rarer than once in a generation a leading figure. The president of the Children's Court is also a presiding judge in the Children's Court. I said more needs to be done, and if you want to create a criminal or a monster, this is how you do it, by making them go stir crazy behind bars and invalidating their sufferings and their unfairnesses. And we can't change or turn around the life of a young one, an 11-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, 15, 17, 18-year-old. Then who are we? What sort of society are we? What sort of society are we creating? You know, prepared to demonize children until they become recidivists as adults and then finish up and ruin lives going in and out of adult prisons for longer periods than what they were doing as children in children's prisons. I've written about the forensic detail, the coroner's court's limitations, the government's failings, the Department of Corrective Services failings, over the strongest possible language, truthful language, honest language, and that's the only way to exact any change. And we launched the book. I had 10 weeks to write it because she wanted it out by the anniversary, or the sad anniversary of her child's death, which for her was the 12th of October and not the 19th of October of 2023, because he was found in his cell, but he had passed away. And no amount of lying by government or corrective services can take that away. But they were basically breathing air when the paramedics came into a corpse. They didn't want to say at the time because they had freaked out. This was going to be the first child death in Banksia Hill or Unit 18. They're one and the same in the children's prison in Western Australia. They've been under the pump for years by people like myself who have would gain traction in the media to get across the world's record high suicidality, and suicide attempts, which was actually Banksia Hill. All the data I could collect that was robust around the world, Banksia Hill outstripped everyone. So we were the world's highest suicidality rates, world's highest self-harms, world's highest number of attempted suicides, and yet we were fortunate enough to have one. But to say that it was not foreseeable, or to blatantly say that it was foreseeable, is an insult to this boy and the boy that died 10 months later, also by suicide, a white boy, whose name I won't mention because I don't have permission from the family to do so. But he cried out for help, and he went in and out, and he could have been helped. There's a long story there in itself. But 10 months after Cleveland passed away, this young boy also passed away. So what that goes to, it's not a black problem or a white problem. It's a carceral problem. It's a broken system. It's a systemic problem in disrepair. And at the very least, needs systemic repair or reconfiguration. And actually to work to the rehabilitative, the restorative, the life transformative. But this book's actually everything about this boy's life, the capability that he had. He was culturally rich, being a Wangai boy, Matu boy, a Yamaji boy. And his identity was robust and strong. He had what most kids who from First Nations families don't have, the First Peoples, who finish up being incarcerated, a mapping of his family history. He was actually a merit-based student. He was highly successful at school, and it was only his longing to find his father's identity that led him to Mikatara, where he was without his mum and without his siblings, that he went astray on his own a bit and finished up incarcerated. And from then on, he got on the drug to address issues about absence of parent, of a father that he loved dearly, who loved him also, but he'd been in Banksia Hill himself as a child, almost 4 years of time spent in Banksia. And when he was 15, when he was 16, the mother was 15, and she was pregnant to a young one, Cleveland. The father spent the first 8 months of the mum's pregnancy in Banksia Hill. So that's intergenerational. It's intergenerational sins of the nation. It's intergenerational deaths in custody. It's intergenerational trauma. It's intergenerational poverty. Let's remember that the First Peoples had been held back, unlike migrants who, as hard as they had their working lives, and they had the opportunity, at least not denied to them, to leave a legacy and support their young ones, unlike till the 1960s, 70s, in some parts of the country, till today, where they were held back by not having the education they could have, not being allowed to get educated when they should have, and not being supported to get an education today when poverty now, part of that intergenerational poverty, has held them back. And we need the rapid affirmative actions to do so. So this book doesn't spend its time calling out all the historical narratives because we know them. It's specific to the individuated of his circumstance pre-Banksia, during Banksia, in Unit 18. He was first sold by the courts, then failed by the Banksia Hill mob, because if you finish up in Unit 18, you've been failed at Banksia. And he finished up at Unit 18 because of Banksia, and so did all the others there. So instead of working even harder with them and supporting them more immersively, we just carcerally deprived them further of their liberty. And they finished, out of the last 86 days of his life, he spent 75 days of those 86 days, 23 hours to 24 hours of those days incarcerated. They've added up the minutes, and it was 4 hours and 36 minutes he had out in those 86 days.
And this is an important book to come out now, especially since the Northern Territory has continued its assault on children, lowering the age of criminal responsibility to 10, legislating spit hoods to be back on. This is a nationwide problem.
Well, they went forwards a little bit, then they went backwards. They actually legislated to raise the age from 10 to 12, then they rescinded that because of scaremongering and outcries of community, because of community safety issues and crime, youth crime. But what they didn't do at that time was actually fund everything that should have been funded to support these young kids to turn their lives around. Because it's been my experience that if you work with someone, no matter how young or how old, if you work with them for long enough and believe in them until they believe in themselves, that actually comes to happen. They do believe in themselves. But, you know, this boy had a good start in life, and he wasn't the usual child, the suffering from the beginning of life that other children have had. He was failed by circumstances that were behoven on him, weaved in by his visit to Mikatara, and being on his own a lot of the time, and with a crowd that has never been supported itself to get an education to be strong in their directions. Because racism still exists in this country, classism exists in this country, and in some places like Mikatara and Kalgoorlie and all over this country, in remote and regional communities that are not predominantly First Nations people, but the invader, I don't call them settlers, the invader, and they've never worked to address these issues collectively. They've only worked to put some affirmative actions in to homogenise them as part of the deal to get ahead. So in the very least, they didn't even do that across the board. So in the end, he was let down by a state that also took away. So this is why I say we leave people behind, but we also hold them back. We held this child back. Society held this child back. In the book, I actually say it clearly. Australia killed Cleveland Dodd. Australia killed Cleveland Dodd. That's what I want listeners and readers to actually get from this. And we sold 2,000 books in 2 weeks.
Saying that the sales of this book will go to support the family, something that the state also isn't doing.
Well, the state is beholden to support, and there's compensability that should arise from that, but that doesn't address immediate needs and concerns. It's taken me sometimes 6, 7, 8 years to get compensation for families from deaths in custody, and that's a sad record, because there are families with teenagers who could have been supported at that time, and their teenage years are wiped away waiting, and there's more dire circumstance in their lives as we hold them back. But we've helped raise the funds for the gravestone for the child, which is what the mother wanted, and we've dedicated quite a bit of the proceeds to the children getting an education. I know not everybody likes boarding school, but it's their only opportunity, these ones, because it's a single parent mum, 6 children, 5 who remain, and the memory of Cleveland, the eldest child, would want his brothers educated, and he loved school. He loved school. He was good with the guitar. He could horseback ride. He was a great painter and artist, which most of the nation has seen from his artworks that we've got out. Even his last artwork, it's in the book. He did that 4 weeks before in jail, in Unit 18, before he passed away. But I did say earlier he passed on the October the 12th. Formally, it's October the 19th. I was there at the hospital at ICU at the invitation of the family, their insistence that I did. Roger Cook helped me, the WA Premier, when I asked him to get the handcuffs off the father and the shackles off his legs so he could embrace his child that last day in hospital. And he's helped me a bit with the family, so he's been ultra empathetic that way, but that hasn't translated to the systemic repair that needs to happen. It's improved, but it's nowhere near the mountain slime of repair that needs to be done to guarantee the well-being of every child who goes in there and the propensity for their improved life circumstance. So they pumped him with air in that last 7 days so they could tone it down, so he didn't die in a jail cell but died in hospital, and that changed the narrative somewhat, and it gave time to temper the situation rather than have outright distress, which is probably the right response at that time, outright distress, because it's already over 600 deaths in custody. 18 of them have been children. There's been 18 children in Australia that have died as child deaths in custody in children's prison in every state and territory. Tasmania, for instance, in 2012, 12-year-old that took his life in Ashley Children's Prison or juvenile detention in Tasmania. And Don Dell, I remember writing about a young boy, 15 years of age, who was from Groote Eylandt, who committed the crime of stealing from the largest manganese mine storeroom in Groote Eylandt, stealing some pens and pencils and stationery so he could go to school. And if that was me that had caught him, I would have said, brother, keep the books, keep the pens and pens, go to school and come back when you need more. But that wasn't the response he got. 5 days later, he took his life in Dundalk, and that was February of 2001. I'll never forget that. So nothing's changed. And now Cleveland became the first one in Western Australia, which is a horrific carceral history, worse than anyone else in the nation. The highest incarceration rates are in Western Australia, aggregated, categorised, disaggregated. And the First Nations people are the mother of all jailers. The highest incarceration rates of First Nations people anywhere in the world, or the First Peoples anywhere in the world, or of all people racialised in that lens, is Western Australia and Australia, but Western Australia is the highest. Higher than the Black American incarceration rate. 1 in 13 of all adult males who are the first peoples in Western Australia are in prison today. 1 in 13. Higher. No one comes anywhere close. Not Latin America, not Latino USA, not Black USA, African American USA, and not, if I can use this language, Indian American or Indigenous American USA. So, yeah. So the proceeds will go to getting these kids the education that they deserve. They've got the cultural mapping and the cultural identity down pat. What they need now is their education to navigate the mainstream and be able to put food on the table, guarantee themselves security and family building.
And I'll have copies with me on the way.
Yep, I've given you a box. So therefore you read it, your listeners who I hope to become readers, and if the demand's there from Melbourne, like it's been from West Australia, Northern Territory and Sydney, where we've exceeded 10,000 now, and we rushed this in. I had the publishers lined up, but the publishers couldn't publish till 20 at the time. I wanted it done by October of 2025, so I had 10 weeks to get that in. The publishers said this is worthy, this is good, but we have to do the editing, proofreading and all that, and line up the sales, the bottom dollar as they go all about. And but they said they couldn't publish till late 2026. Usually they take 12 to 18 months to publish a book. And 2026 is what most of them said, and 2027 is what another couple said. So that was disappointing. So I financed it. And then some friends or whatever, and I mostly financed it. I paid it out of my pocket. We got the printer, we put the book together, and it's pretty good, I say. So, and I wrote it in 10 weeks. Parkinson's disease, as you know, afflicts me. I can only use one finger, so I typed with one finger, 10 weeks. So don't judge it too harshly. But it's everyone who's read it has been moved by it, and that's brought me some heart and made some belief that maybe this book will make some difference in people's lives and compel some reform. The Premier's read it, the Corrective Services Minister's read it, the Corrective Services Commissioner's read it, I've given it to everybody to read. And actually, we know that they were flooded. A lot of people that bought the book who were also advocates also sent it on to the government. And I sent 15 copies to the inquiry into youth justice that's going to happen by the Australian Senate in March of next year. So I sent them to Canberra. So they're my submission, the book. I've done a lot of inquiries over the years, but this time I just sent the book. So they have, and they're obliged to read it. Their parliamentary obligations, those on the committee, oblige them to read it. So that gives me some satisfaction, and it will be read.
Well, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us.
And to your listeners, I say, if you're going to read a book, read this one, because it's about a boy whose memory needs to be retained. Let the movement not end. It's lasted 2 years. We've shone the light. The coroner's inquest, the findings weren't the end of it. They were the beginning of it. And it was successful in the sense that we got the exposure that wouldn't have been got to get some of the findings that we've got, some of the changes that we've made. And now we need that traction to keep on going so we can finally get this done across the board for all suicidality, black and white, for all failed individuals in prisons, 132 carceral estates, carceral facilities, 132 prisons. So get the book, read it, and write to me, and start up a movement yourself, wherever you are, and be the flame that does not tremble. Just be that flame, light the flame, and may that flame not tremble. And just keep on going, and, you know, I encourage a multitude of voices. And no, I don't like the individuated stuff where people go on their own and create little collectives. We need a multitude of voices that actually come together and couple as firepower. And the more voices that we have, the more firepower we have, the more change we can expect.